Hey, good people. Thanks for joining me, Pam Booker, host of Where's Your Tree? A podcast series dedicated to liberating storytelling and conversations on green topics, social change, and sustainable living. On this episode, the second of a two-part series, we continue exploring the idea of joyful dirt as both a metaphor for daily living and as applied practice. So if you haven't listened to part one, which featured Rosamond King's creative and poetical play on the idea of the erotic, pleasurable dirty, you can find it on the wheresyourtree.com website. On this segment, I got to hang out with folks that I call eco-influencers, who garden, farm, organize, and generally make things happen in Newark, New Jersey, on behalf of locally grown foods, clean water systems, and quality of life concerns for family and youth. They're also really astute leaders on navigating and demystifying the bureaucracy that regulates these networks. In just a moment, we'll hear from three of Newark's fiercest organizing advocates, Tobias Fox, Emilio Panassi, and Amaryllis Olivo Maccabee, who are building green spaces in the city one brick, one adopted lot at a time. As I mentioned in part one of this series, the joyful dirt theme was inspired by a grower in my social media group, Edible Gardening by Black Girls with Gardens, who bedazzled everyone with photos of her harvest of robust-looking tomatoes. I so appreciate this group, an incredibly knowledgeable and generous network of women planters who actively draw from the sustainable applications that ancestors have practiced over the lifetimes. That same planter mentioned an organic soil product that she used called Joyful Dirt. The product claims, and I'll quote again, to enhance plant growth, health, and disease resistance. All of which began my point of entry for exploring the science of dirt and more, the linguistic and metaphysical possibilities for these terms. The takeaway for me is that while dirt is a natural physical substance, it's as much a context, a perspective that speaks to our ability to re-see the dirty deities that we all carry within us. At the same time, our ability to stir up joy or to be joyful is hardly a simple equation and should probably not be approached as an easy emotional counter option to the dirty parts or spaces in our lives that challenge us. This is where yin and yang don't necessarily make sense to me. Rather, it's more about what happens when we choose to explore these two seemingly opposing elements from a place of vulnerability that I think proves more effective for the long term. Too often, we set off blindly pressing forward to remove the dirt that clogs our lives, eager to avoid our emotional and conditional fallouts and conflicts as lessons. The ability to nuance what's really urgent versus what we can surrender to poignancy, for example, and our need for strategic action and resolution is a powerful moment of self-mediation. I'm the first to say, let the temple say, namaste, in this regard. Yet to make the first gesture brings with it surprising gifts. In my example, Where's Your Tree began as a disquieting thought that I then shared as more organized ideas in the shaping and writing of a commencement address. The presentation then morphed into another kind of project idea that eventually launched a podcast. How it's been loosened is what nourishes me and spurs the larger circles of allies and even the naysayers or haters toward a necessary growth, an ethical restoration, grounding, and trust, mostly because we've got to find ways on a daily basis to have some fun and build community while we're doing this hard work in a fantastically hostile climate. Ultimately, ecosystems and habitats are only as healthy as the people who inhabit them. Next up, conversations with three of Newark's model eco-influencers. Also known as Brick City, which refers to the many and varied public housing structures built in the city over the years, Newark wrangles with the bleak portraits of its past that have often only been distinguished for its toughness and turmoil. And that's for real. But it's also a city filled with sites of renewal and ambition for its economic and cultural future. Add to this encouraging observation the city's impressive historical and current engagement with arts, education, and business initiatives, along with its burgeoning small farm and food growing coalitions, and you discover the tale of a city that resides at the brightest intersections of reinvention. Tobias Fox, Emilio Panassi, and Amaryllis Mockaby are three passionate, mobilizing eco-influencers, and each works at the forefront of the city's robust green movement on a variety of community projects. We're also community members with NCSF, Newark Community Food Systems, a task force that works in partnership with Whole Cities Foundation and Newark's Science and Sustainability, an advocacy-focused nonprofit founded by Tobias Fox. Known for his innovative community building and relentless commitment to Newark's green revival, particularly on food justice and energy renewal issues, I caught up with Tobias following a long day of events at the Newark Sustainable Science Conference this past spring. In this conversation, he offers thoughtful strategies for shaping the story as critical dialogues that he's used with politicians and policymakers, along with partnering science and eco-art as ways for redressing the city's shattered ecosystems and in encouraging folks to rediscover what they love about their neighborhoods. So tell me, what is your vision both for these conferences and, I guess, by extension, where there's a lot of emphasis on Newark 2020? What are you hoping for in terms of Newark becoming, I guess, more balanced, more regulated? We have a lot of issues with homelessness, right. With opioid issues, and yet we have this beautiful sort of, you know, kind of this gardening sensibility, right, where people are trying to accommodate and eradicate those things that have been burdensome, right, for Newark. So where do you sit with all of this, and what do you see if you had a conversation with the mayor, yeah, or the you know, the Office of Sustainability, which I'm sure you do with both, where are you trying to move them to?
All right, so my goal with Newark Science and Sustainability Inc. is to create ways that will awaken the social immune system, that will bring some type of social alarm to our socioeconomic, environmental issues that are going on in our communities. And in doing so, I can only do this through demonstration. And so some type of form of visual demonstration. And so with the hopes that others will want to catch on, either be a part of this movement, create a movement of their own that speaks to what we are trying to accomplish, and which is creating healthier, more sustainable communities. And so I look at the social systems that we talk about in our organization, which is food through urban agriculture, wellness, nutrition, education, renewable energy, which is highly important, you know, ecological building. How do we build structures in a more sustainable way? And eco-art, which is highly important. You know, the arts, using the arts as a way to, again, tap into people's social immune system, you know. And so these are my approaches. And so my conversation with anyone in a political position that can bring about some systemic changes through policy would be about how can we work together to magnify our small steps, you know, to make the residents here in the city you know, feel more empowered. Their lives feel more enriched. And communities become fully more developed, you know? And so that's just my humble steps, you know?
Well, you're doing an amazing job. And I just want to take the moment to offer the appreciation that I feel. Mm-hmm. And then I think that the larger community feels, because I know sometimes you feel like you're pushing that boulder uphill, and you are. But you are committed and invested in that. And I think that that's part of the draw. So thank you, my friend.
Appreciate
you. All right, thank you.
Embrace. Thank you.
Emilio Panassi and I met about 5 years ago when I first volunteered with Jersey Cares. He's a co-founder of Swag, a small farm located in Newark's South Ward that partners with Planting Seeds of Hope for bringing fresh-grown produce to local families. He's also an urban and regional planner focused on nonprofit community development and social entrepreneurship models that produce social good while also building revenue streams to maintain future operations. I'm always thrilled when he sends a text announcing freshly grown leftovers from Swag's Farmers Market. Here are highlights from our conversation at the Newark Sustainability Science Conference, also from last spring.
Where do we start? I start with my own sense of self within that context. So you cannot find a perfect philosophy sometimes of or course of action for how to navigate all of those issues you just outlined. For example, you could start growing your own food, but then to your point earlier, you have to worry about the water quality you're getting from your very own city tap or saving in your own cistern. What if it's toxic rain? What if it's lead or arsenic water from the city? And you think you're doing everything possible to eat the healthiest, freshest food, but then you realize that there's all these factors that make it so hard for you to grow. Well, then I say to myself, first of all, is this still better than the alternative, right? And do I kind of forgive myself enough about it not being perfect and keep taking those steps forward? While also trying to hold yourself accountable to each year or each season to correct those steps. So I've seen, for example, every urban farm that I work with or around the city take incremental steps towards its progress. And when you go to a very established urban or rural farm that boasts about very sustainable, beautiful practices, first of all, they all still have flaws. And secondly, they haven't gotten there overnight. We ourselves can't get there overnight. Sometimes we're making these decisions between two factors that are both bad. that it's not as
betwixt and between.
Yeah, you can't just go read an article, find the perfect diet, and then you've solved it. Mm-hmm. Everything has consequences with it, pros and cons. It shouldn't paralyze us, and it shouldn't make us upset with ourselves or others around us who are maybe at different stages of navigating that or making their own choices about it. But that at the same time shouldn't lead us to just complete tolerance of, okay, any action or anything I'm doing is just fine because, you know, screw it.
Right.
No, exactly. Things are going to make a difference. Things objectively by data and by experience and by your interaction with other people do make a difference and sort themselves out to be the right quote unquote choice. But that's only sometimes lived through time and experience accepting the imperfection of it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well said. With the impetus always being around not doing more harm, right? That's kind of where we can start with. So why don't you share a little bit about what's going on at SWAG? I know that you're very excited. And for my listeners who don't know, that's the South Ward Agricultural Farm. And that's exactly how we met through my deciding to take one of those actions.
SWAG is doing really great because we've reorganized our physical structure a little bit, as well as our volunteer and labor kind of organizational structure. So we're once again blessed. We're working with Jersey Cares very closely. That's the volunteer organization that may have pointed you in the beginning.
Yes.
And Newark Community Solutions for some of their young people who are avoiding jail time for minor offenses by doing their community service with us. We're planning to expand on that. And we are now in partnership with Beth Israel, Jersey Cares, and the Peshine School for a whole well-rounded health and fitness curriculum that's going to be taking place at the Garden and at their school, and include food growing. So we just try to make SWAG a nexus of all these positive programs that are already out there, because we can't invent new things, and because this is just the way to go. You know, use people's strengths that they already have to just come to SWAG and be part of it. And we have directed this year some of our great new young interns who have a lot of enthusiasm to be there with Mr. Vincent as the sort of volunteer coordinators. And it's been really fun so far. People have been having a great time.
All right. Well, thank you for sharing both the SWAG experience, what I'm hoping to reconnect with a little bit more this summer for myself, and also just in terms of the footprints and the imprints that we're trying to re-navigate here in Newark specifically, and as we do it locally, it does in fact allow it to expand globally, is ultimately the goal, right? So thank you again. Amaryllis Alivo Maccabee is a compassionate firebrand, community grower, and educator who's all about reclaiming urban green space and addressing what she calls food insecurity on behalf of the students and families that she partners with on a range of local projects. We met up at her garden space called Garden of Worker Bees, located on Broadway in the heart of Newark's busy, highly trafficked North Central Ward. In many ways, the garden's location is exactly where you might dream of finding a green oasis and relief from toxic urban footprints, literally at the nexus of a densely populated city network. At the same time, the garden can exist as almost a cipher, invisible, hidden from the untrained eye that is easily distracted by the neon signs and fast food restaurants adjacent flea market and other street vendors that obstruct your sight line. Yet on crossing over, walking through the garden's gate, that is, time seems to stop. Your breathing relaxes as you and the bees that are plentiful in this modestly composed urban Eden universe settle in to enjoy the splendor.
I love your first name. Is that chosen or given?
So surprisingly, we had an activity this week with a team building activity, and you were supposed to say like your name and why was it chosen. And so I said, oh, my name is Amaryllis. It's a flower that's usually in December, but I was born in April. And so my mom did not have a name picked for me, and someone gave her three names, and that was the one that she picked. And so that's how I ended up with that name. But interestingly, my grandparents, I'm from Puerto Rico, and so my grandparents' area we're from is Jabucoa. Very familiar to people because of the storm Maria, yes, where that was the eye that hit. But
have
our family.
You had a chance to visit?
I did. I went this past spring. My grandparents were also farmers and into agriculture, and so I think that's why I have a green thumb. And so, you know, I always, like I mentioned during the week in some meetings, I think we should always pay honor to our ancestors and to the land. And I think that's why it's important also for us to be educated about our roots and our history and our heritage and all the things that come before us.
What was your idea behind starting this garden?
I started in 2013 with Rutgers Jan Zentek from the Essex County Master Gardeners, and it was an Adopt-A-Lot program, still is, and we just started just as a community garden, still our community garden, and we started with five beds, learning how to plant tomatoes. And so studying all about food insecurity in the city and just access to food. And so we wanted to address those issues and learn how to grow organically. And that's how we started with five beds. And then today we're up to about 22 beds. We have mostly herbs in the front of the garden here. So about 4 to 6 beds of herbs. And we try to grow something new every year. new vegetable to see how it does. And we also have flowers for pollinators. We noticed we do have a lot of bumblebees. We did have a hive, but the bees didn't overwinter. And we noticed some butterflies this year, so we're doing well with that.
Talk to people about how the community is involved and how people responded. I just heard you talking to a little boy and sort of talking about, and I've heard you talking about this sort of commitment to growing and nurturing the farm and then participating in the harvest, and people don't always get the equation.
Right. And so each community garden is different. And so my concept is work for food. And so we don't charge anyone to participate here. You're welcome to bring your own seeds. And so we try to use things that are culturally relevant here. So we do plant cilantro. We do plant.
And what kind of neighborhood is this?
Right. So it's diverse. We'll have a big, large Hispanic population from, South American to Caribbean, African American. So I've had people give me seeds from Guyana. I have people give me seeds from India. I've gone to Italy, so I have seeds from Italy.
Nice.
But even in planting different tomatoes, we plant diverse tomatoes. We plant Japanese eggplant. So it's just, to be educational as well with different produce so that we can learn how to eat what's in season. But the concept is that we start in March or April, whenever the ground is ready. And that's when we're putting in the work. And the harvest is usually ready in July. So when everybody sees it in full bloom and everybody's like, oh, can I have a tomato? And it's not, it's easier to just give someone something, but it's different when you're actually putting in the work and actually seeing it from seed to actual fruit. And so we don't give away anything. The concept is that you are committed to coming in and giving some hours and putting in the work. And then when the harvest is ready, then you benefit from that work that you put in all season long. And so my little neighbor who I was talking to, his grandmother is next door at the market, and he has faithfully come every Saturday, and so he does share with his grandmother. But I guess the other vendors are now seeing the fruit as well, and so I just wanted to reiterate and have him understand, we've been here just us gardening and putting in all the work. We can't give away all our work for free.
Right.
And so I think he understands that concept.
How long has the garden been here, and what was some of the process that you had to go through in terms of funding? I know that, you've had to apply to a number of sources. I see you as kind of one of what I call our green influencers here in Newark, and one of our eco-influencers, right? Because I've had a chance to, share space with you and to hear your commitment to the city of Newark and to developing green spaces. So share with me a little bit what that process was like for you.
So the Adopt-A-Lot process for me, I'm very familiar with that because I did work with Elizabeth Reynoso, who was the food policy director under Cory Booker's administration. So I helped to catalog the city gardens and the different food initiatives at that time. And so, again, I have a very in-depth knowledge of city gardens and food issues and also different initiatives that even schools are doing. And so at the end of my tenure with her and interning with her, I decided to adopt a lot and commit the space. And so I've been here since 2013. I'm an individual who adopted the lot, and I work with nonprofit organizations such as Tobias Fox and Newark Science and Sustainability, Emilio Panashi and the Urban Ag Cooperative, the SWAG Project. Just as a collective, we do try to share resources. This initially was a upcycle and recycle kind of garden and in-kind donations. And so whatever resources I put in, because per our lease, we're not permitted to sell produce, which really is not sustainable in the long run. So what we do is...
Is that a policy of the Adopt-A-Lot program?
It is.
And why... is that in place?
Each year we have different changes to the lease. Initially, you didn't have to be a resident of Newark. Then they changed it and you had to be a resident of Newark. And then, as each administration comes in and they change policies from year to year, so you can't get an exact answer. When you speak to one person, you get one answer. And you speak to someone else, you get something, a different answer. So we're trying to work with the city officials and trying to get, more specific language, especially with land tenure, because I have been here, but this is not necessarily a residential area or redevelopment area. So I think that's why this garden has been here so long. If it was in a redevelopment area, it's possible that it could have been auctioned off. And that doesn't
domain.
Right.
Yeah.
And it doesn't necessarily mean that if it does go to auction that I will get preference because I've been here. So that's part of the issue as well. And I do have a lot of volunteers that come from Jersey Cares, my family members, and there are some friends. And so it's taken quite a while for some community members to actually commit, again, because I'm not necessarily in a specific residential area. And so I think...
Is it transient in terms
right.
of people discover you?
Right, because people pass by here all the time. And they're like, oh, I didn't realize that was your garden. And so it's interesting because... people go to the market all the time, so you would think that there would be an influx of people coming. And people, it's, usually here on Saturday, but people are running errands or they're working and I want to come to the garden, but I can't. Mm-hmm. So that's why we do a lot of workshops where we teach people.
Talk to me about some of the workshops you do.
So I usually partner with different organizations. I definitely partner with the church because they have a commercial kitchen space. I partner with the pop-up markets that we have. And so this year I've been fortunate to apply for the Whole Cities Foundation grant, and so I received a grant so that I would be able to do the Taste of African Heritage culinary series, which teaches relevant cultural indigenous foods that we can harvest and how to cook them and how to be healthy, because diabetes, cardiovascular disease, obesity, those things are not part of our heritage. And so those things are definitely prevalent in our communities, and we can overcome those things if we definitely put a focus on our diet. And I think that we just need to kind of shift our way of thinking and our lifestyles and not necessarily think that it's, a diet or a fad, but definitely implement changes, just a little at a time, and over time see changes, because it's not like we gain weight overnight,
right.
So we can't lose it overnight, right? We have to take little steps. And so part of the classes that we do is, one, to try to teach how to cook the produce that we have to eat in season because it's less expensive, but also how to preserve the foods in a healthy manner. So drying some of the herbs to make teas, also canning with not so much salt, but more with spices so that we can eat some of those fruits and vegetables later in the season when they're not available. Yeah. So,
what is your vision for the garden, and maybe even yourself in terms of your relationship to food justice and the distribution of it, and also the nutritional benefits of food sourcing? What is your vision in that regard?
So right now I serve as an educator and I educate high school students in a culinary program, and I'm the farm to table educator. So I know that we have a lot of focus on younger students and planting and eating healthy, but I think there needs to be more focus on our high school students who are going out into the real world and helping them to see themselves as advocates for our food system and food justice, and helping them to navigate that. So wherever this, my spirit leads me to serve, and that's how I see myself, as a person of service. So I'm at a, good space right now.
What a great close to our summer episodes of Where's Your Tree? Many thanks to my guests, Tobias Fox, Emilio Panassi, and Amaryllis Maccabee, for demonstrating that climate is changed when deliberate actions are taken to restore green spaces and urban environments in communities of color in particular, in which allow folks to replenish themselves with foods that they grow in the dirt that they toil while sustaining healthy ways of being in the world. There are a list of exciting upcoming events throughout Newark in September that include city garden tours and a community meal gathering that promises to be filling for the stomach and the heart. I'll be on hiatus until then, but check for details on my website and look forward to hearing more when I return. You can always drop me a line, share your thoughts, and share the podcast with friends. And remember to listen to past episodes that you may have missed. All amazing voices and people that I've been so very fortunate to be in conversation with and inspired by. Many heartfelt thanks to each of my past guests. You can reach me, Pamela Booker, on all of the usual social media sites, or you can do it the old school way by email, pamela@wheresyourtree.com, and through my website. Thanks for listening and being such a supportive audience over the months. Until the next time, be still, stand in love, pay attention. Ciao.